You're with Cape Talk.
This is Pippa Hudson on Lunch.
Now, right now, it's my great pleasure to welcome to the studio actress, comedian, scriptwriter, TV host, and former radio presenter, Tumi Maraka. Emphasis on the former. I feel I have to start by apologizing for dragging you back into a radio studio, Tumi, because after reading your book, I get the feeling you're not in a rush to repeat the process.
I miss studio. Oh, my gosh. I miss radio.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, we've missed hearing you on radio. It's lovely to have you back, and thanks for popping in today. I read you a long list of titles. The one thing I should have added is, of course, the word author, because Tumi's just released her first book, And Then Mama Said, published by Penguin Random House. It is a memoir. It deals with some of the highlights and lowlights of her childhood, of her career to date, but most importantly, talks about the absolutely indelible influence of her late mother in forming the person she is today. She is in town, of course, for that comedy show tonight, Married But Not to Each Other with Ndumiso Lindi. Before we talk about your mom and anything else, I believe you sold out.
Yeah, how exciting.
So let's rub it in for everybody who's not coming. What are they going to miss?
FOMO. So, they're going to miss out on laughing about relationshipping, because, you know, this is just our comedy show is a celebration of relationshipping. So we the material focuses on love and the funny side of any kind of love relationship. And we also have Ask a Couple in the show, where the audience get to interact and we talk.
Be warned if you're sitting in the front row. Okay. Well, I am going to give away one more double ticket in the secret something after 2:30. So hold your horses till then if you'd like to win. In the meantime, though, if you'd like to speak to Tumi, say hello, ask a question. Remember to dial us on 021-446-0567. Tell us about your mum. How much of her is there in you?
Oh, my gosh. More than I thought there was. I actually caught my reflection in the mirror this morning, and I my heart kind of skipped a beat, because I realized how much I resembled her in that moment. But in personality, my gosh, I think my mother's there all the time. Her audacity, her tenacity, her loudness. and her love for people. I think she definitely left me some gems.
Tumi, I remember interviewing a couple of years ago in Nkulikhosi Tsile, and I asked her the question what it was like sharing her mom with the struggle. And her reply was, I didn't share her. She was taken by it. Mm. You were impacted similarly. Both of your parents were activists. Your dad spent time in jail, which took him, just removed him from your childhood so suddenly, almost overnight. And how do you feel about the sacrifice that they made and how it impacted on your life? Do you feel anger and resentment for what you lost personally because of what they were fighting for a greater ideal?
Man, it's so complicated. Because, you know, I still never got my dad back in many ways, because it's a very difficult relationship right now, which deserves a book.
Sequel.
But no, I've learned a lot from the sacrifice they made. You know, my dad gave us up for the struggle, I feel. I don't think he meant to. I don't think he consciously decided that that's what's going to happen. I appreciate it for what it is. And it's helped me become a better parent, in that when there's certain things I have to do, which mean I'm not in my kids' faces all the time, and I'm not like a typical mom who's there baking the cake herself for the birthday and sewing the costume herself for the costume party. It helps me forgive myself, because I remember that, you know, greater sacrifices have been made by parents before us.
If it makes you feel better, there are lots of moms who aren't playing that role anymore. And that's the reality of the world we live in today.
Yes.
And I like the fact that you pay tribute to that. I like the fact that you describe your home as being a place where your kids are free to make mistakes.
I thought
that was such an interesting comment, that you actually allow them. You know, historically, home was a place where the rules were laid down and you were taught to behave and you didn't step out of line. You've got a different approach. You expect that from your kids when they're out in public, but you're actually quite a little bit more lenient at home.
Yeah, because how else are they going to learn? And also, come on, man, if you can't relax at home, where are you going to relax? Mm. You know, I want my kids to grow into who they are. My mom raised me. She gave me a long rope with which to hang myself. And I could tell when this rope was getting shorter, and I'd be like, okay. Stop pulling. And so I feel like the same thing's happening with my kids, which is tricky with my firstborn because I feel like I gave birth to myself. He is so headstrong, and it's such a fine line between, disciplining a child and clipping their wings.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a tricky place, but I'm enjoying it.
What shines through in your book over and over again is how much your mom valued education, particularly for women.
Absolutely.
And for me, one of the most moving things was reading the story of your just dogged determination to finish your degree at Wits. You'd started by hook or by crook, you got yourself there. You cobbled enough money. You squatted on people's floors. Mm-hmm. You lent on friends to get you through those first few years. But you reached a point where you just couldn't financially register for your final year. And to me, it was 6 years before you were able to go back and finish that final year. Mm-hmm. 6 years in which your star took off. You were on the rise. You were headlining. Mm-hmm. You were working in TV, working in comedy. You had a name that was established. You had a career that was on the way. You actually didn't really technically need to finish the degree, certainly not to achieve your career goals. Why was it so important to you to go back and just get that certificate in hand?
I feel like I promised it to my mother. I promised it to myself. It was something I needed to finish. And by that time, I already had my firstborn. And I felt like if I'm going to encourage my kid to get a university degree or to study further in any way, I'd like to have something that I've also done. You know, I can't be going, finish your degree. And he's going, where's your degree? And also being married into a family that's got so many academics and, you know, achievers. But also because really, you know, I understand why education was so important to my mom. You know, in her passing, I realized, man, you know, it's the one thing no one could take away from her. After all is said and done, even after she's lost her house, her money, everything, my mother still had intelligence. She still had her knowledge. Mm-hmm. And it means everything to be empowered like that.
Yeah. It must have been incredibly hard for you to see her going through those losses. Tell us a little bit about what happened to your mom, Timmy.
You know, my mother, like a lot of people, didn't have great financial education. So she in many ways lived beyond her means. And in the background, she was suffering from a bipolar disorder that was undiagnosed. And so it was only until she was in her 40s that this thing was diagnosed. And by then, I mean, this was after she'd had a breakdown. I was in grade 11 going to matric the first time that she had this breakdown. And it was hard to watch her deteriorate like that, you know, because my mother was such a proud woman, you know, always looked good, always her house was always, you know, immaculate. And to just watch her fall apart at the seams like that was really hard.
You had the chance to go and say to her, I finished the degree.
Yes.
She wasn't there to see you graduate, but you at least had that sense of being able to give her that gift you wanted to. How much did that mean to you?
Oh, it meant everything, man. You know, when I walked onto that stage to receive my degree, I just got so choked up. I went from excitement to just pure, like, sadness. It was such a weird mix because I really wished she'd been there to see it because I really was finishing this for her. Mm. But I was also so elated that I had a degree. I had a university degree. Man, it just... Yeah, words can't describe how amazing that felt. And I remember thinking, now to do the masters. I wish she was there. But she was there in spirit, you know. And I lost her a few months after that graduation. But yeah.
You've suffered a lot of loss. And I think a lot of people reading this book to me will wonder, where do you find the funny? How do you manage to get back up on stage and find the laughs night after night when you are battling with your own depression, with your own losses of close family and close friends, with sick kids at home? I mean, your description of the storm that blew up at Jacaranda breaking over your head as you were actually sitting in hospital with a very sick child. Everybody who's a working mom knows what it's like juggling those roles. But there's a particularly extra element of how do you get up there and make people laugh every night when you must be dying inside at some points?
It's an exchange. It's an exchange. I'm making you feel good. And as you're laughing and laughing with me, I'm feeling good. So that's the exchange. You know, I find comedy, I feel like comedians are shamans in a lot of ways. We get into this. We go into this theater or this club, and that's our consultation room, and the healing begins, you know, and that's why I feel like our chant is the humor, is the laughter, because, you know, from punchline to laugh to moments in between to silences, like I've come to enjoy my audience's silences before we go and laugh, because I've come to realize that, oh my gosh, we're right now on the same plane right now, and you guys are hanging on every word I'm saying. And then when we erupt with laughter, it's because it's almost like that's the point. That's the sore point. Yes. And then we just, you know, enjoy it together. And that's how I've made people laugh. It's, you know, comedy's also been a crutch for me. I've had to learn to not let it be a crutch and rather let it be, yes, a way of purging and facing things. But at some point, it was also a crutch, because through everything, even as you read the book, you'll see I've just laughed. Even in the darkest moments, I found something to laugh at. And sometimes it was a way to run away from the fact that the thing hurts. And now I feel like it improves my comedy when I go, don't make it a way of running away. Make it a way of saying, this thing is real, but it doesn't have to overwhelm us.
I mean, I'm listening to all of that and I'm thinking of you sitting in that chair behind the microphone at Radio Jacaranda and still finding your feet in that show and saying something on air about the legacy of apartheid and an audience exploding in retaliation. Sure. And they didn't get the joke. Well, it wasn't a joke, but they didn't get the point, is the more apt thing to say. You were cleared by the Broadcast and Complaints Commission. So those who ran and said she's guilty of hate speech can get back in their box. But it was much more than just a complaint against your name as a presenter. There were threats. There was abuse on social media. You were told better to take your name off the side of the car because you might be physically in danger if people identify you as such. That had to be terrifying as the mother of three young children. To know that suddenly your job had stuck its fingers back into everything else in your life.
Yeah. And, you know, it took me a while for everything else to sink in, because my focus was on Bonsu because he was so ill, my son. But it was realizing that the people coming at me are realizing they can't get at me. I was really taking their abuse well. And they decided to go after the people around me. And that's when it became hard. That's when, honestly, I felt weighed down. I broke down and I felt like something needs to change. There needs to be a shift in gear here, because I cannot be punished through other people. I think, that for me was where I just felt like, okay, right now, enough is enough. Fine, I'll get into a room with these people. I will do whatever it takes. I accept apologize. That I would not do, because, you know, it took me until the following day to even figure out why people were so angry. And I think when you say something, knowing that there's an element of hate in it, you should at least expect some kind of backlash on that level, which I didn't. I just felt like something had changed. I just remember that feeling of trembling and feeling like, why does that feel huge? Why did that statement feel so huge? Why did this moment feel so huge? And then I moved away from it because I thought, well, I suppose we've never been this honest on this station. You know, this is music. This is good times. And this has been a very deep conversation. Yeah. My word, did reality not just land the very next day? My poor manager getting threats on the phone. There's actually a message which I regret deleting, which was on Facebook, where I was threatened with gang rape. And I just out of pure shock and horror, I deleted and banned the person from my page. But in retrospect, I'm like, man, I should have saved this thing and then rebroadcast it on their page so people can see what this person is saying. Because my biggest shocker was going to people's profiles, because I don't know if people are aware that not all of us have other people running our pages. I'm very particular about my pages because I have a very specific voice and I like being in touch with my fans. So generally, if you've sent me hate, I've read it. And you've sent me love, I've read it. And so I would go and check their profiles. I was so shocked at how many family people who put God and Christianity in their biographies were saying the most hateful, borderline demonic stuff I'd ever seen in my life. And I'm like, and you post your Christianity and your love for God as part of your biography of who you are, but this is what you say and do? It's shocking.
Just going to steal a couple of extra minutes with Tumi Maraka. We're talking about her new book, And Then Mama Said. She's on at the Baxter tonight with Ndumiso Lindi, and Zuki's just WhatsApp saying, please will you ask Tumi if they're going to make the show into a DVD? I'm a huge fan of her and the Rooster.
But the DVD is so impersonal. You know, the cool thing about our show is that really the audience are very important to it. So
Zuki, you've got to go, oh, another tickets are sold on. Try and play after 2:30. Maybe you can win our final set, Zuki. I've just seen on Twitter Chester Missing tweeting that he's getting his own TV news show. It made me remember to ask you about your reception into the comedy world. One of the things I was pleasantly surprised about reading this book, there are lots of moments where you get angry at people, angry over those comments on Twitter you just disclosed to threaten gang rape to somebody who is a known gang rape survivor is appalling, angry at moments of fat shaming and many other incidents. But what surprised me in the best possible way was your description of how male comedians made the space and opened up the space of comedy to women in a way that is quite unusual for patriarchal spaces.
Yeah, for them it was like an exciting thing. Mm. Like you're a new thing and they want to be a part of it and they want to encourage you and they want to keep you in the industry. Fantastic. So even when you look at the Comics Choice Awards, you know, when you look at how male comedians, we vote for each other. This is a peer voting system.
Yeah.
And the fact that all these male comics are going recognize these women, every year they're women nominated. No, it's really exciting.
Now, you do mention in the book your own struggles with depression. And again, it might surprise people because they see confident to me, bold to me, loud and in your face to me on stage. Not stressed working mom doubting yourself behind the scenes to me. Was that a deliberate sort of vulnerability that you wanted people to know that who they see on stage is not necessarily who you are off stage?
Yeah, I think I needed to share that because I don't consider myself a celebrity. You know, if you say to me it's a celebrity because you see her on the TV all the time and she's known by more people than the average person, cool. But I'm not a celebrity who lives exclusively and removed from everyone. Mm. So I share this because I like being able to move in open spaces and I need people to understand they're interacting with a human being, not some porcelain picture that must always be on standby.
Yeah. Mm. I want to thank you so much for the time you've made available to us today because I know it's a hectic scheduled book launch show tonight, back to Joburg tomorrow to me. It is an absolutely fantastic read and the book is called And Then Mama Said, Words That Set My Life Alight. I feel like we've only skated over some of the most important topics to me and I want to say to everybody, go and read the book for yourself to delve deeper into some of the conversations we've touched on. I guess my final question for you is how you felt about the process of writing the book. Has it been therapeutic in some ways? Has it helped you work through what must be lingering frustrations at the very least over some of the stuff you've been through?
Yeah, it landed me back in therapy.
I guess that's a good thing.
Yes. It's been fantastic. I didn't know I can be this honest, to be honest. I was very afraid of this book. I was okay and happy that I've done it. And then when I found out it was now on the shelves, I panicked. I was like, let me read this book again. Let me prepare myself. Oh my gosh. Here we go. Now I'm happy I did it. I hope people enjoy my truth. I really hope the book isn't depressing. I hope people read it and just go, life is real. Everybody goes through stuff. I can always just choose to walk towards the light. Let me just choose light.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's what I walked away with. I want to thank you so much for sharing it with us today. The Light of Tumi Maraka on stage at the Baxter tonight. Enjoy it, you lucky people who've already got your tickets. Two more to play for after 2:30 for one of our winners on Cape Talk today. Love you to have you with us, Tumi.
Thanks, Pippa.